Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Psyched to Be With You, the podcast hosted by me, Christopher Leach. This is episode 3 of season 2. I sit down and chat to the legend, and I can't stress this enough, legend, Dr. Rachel Cowart, Cavill influencer, video game researcher, author of books, and so much more. This was a great chat. I was so starstruck. I was nervous. I was excited. It was amazing. All the links you need are attached to wherever you found this episode, including Dr. Cowart's website, Twitter, interview that I mentioned for the Safe in Our World podcast. I do want to throw up just like a blanket spoiler warning. I mentioned it, but it was basically too hard to do. Just spoiler warning for The Witcher seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix, and for Final Fantasy 6 and 7, just, you know, be aware that you're going into this with some sort of spoilery territory. But this was an amazing chat. I had such a great time. I hope you enjoy it as well. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to another fantastic episode of Psyched to Be With You, the podcast brought to you by Blind Psyche, with me, your host, Christopher Leach, and another very, very special guest. I am giddy as a goat. As far as celebrity and this podcast have intertwined ever, this is possibly the plinth. I'm genuinely excited. I'm genuinely very nervous. So this is going to be new for me. But I'm just going to pass it straight over to my very special guest. Please, could you introduce who you are and what you do?
Yes, I feel like you've already built me up too much. I am Dr. Rachel Cowart. I am a research psychologist. I am the research director of Take This, which is a mental health nonprofit that serves the gaming industry and gaming communities. I have studied games and gamers for more than 10 years with a specific focus on the social impact of games. I'm also known on the internet as a Henry Cavill influencer, which I know we'll talk about later, which is my true claim to fame. I'm psyched to be with you today.
I mean, it's going to be great. So I've got a few questions, as we usually sort of do in this type of thing. And one of the things I always sort of focus this show on is not what you do, but why you do it. So I've prepared a little succinct sort of summary of kind of the state of play of video game research, because I've heard you say it a bunch of times, and I'm going to link here our friends over at Safe in Our World. You were on their podcast, Safe Spaces, recently, episode 10, I think it was. You sat down with Rosie from there, and it was a great interview. So just go and listen to that, enjoy that before this, then come back. Because you know, I work in the field, so I'm used to having the same conversation. So see if you agree. But you know, generally, video games inherent, they're like anything else, not necessarily good or evil. No real link between violence and aggression. Hot sauce is not a scientific method of aggression. Moral panic, new thing with screen time, addiction, loot boxes. Anything and anything can be maladaptive if used by person or persons for emotional crutches and or cyclical things, as well as someone, say, maybe having more time, will do more things that they like, such as video games. Video games are also very socially important, vis-a-vis you can do things with people online, share times, as well as even share a community around a game that is primarily single player. Everyone's kind of worried a little bit about nothing.
Yeah, very good. There's, you know, just, you know, $150,000 of student loans in 10 years of my life in about 60 seconds. Very good.
Well, I'm only able to do that because of someone such as yourself with your work and reading that. I mean, you know, the video game debate, I made my university buy it, not once, but twice. both editions.
That is the book that I wish I had when I was in school. So that was the whole point of making that book. So I'm glad that your university bought it.
It's a core read, core text in my line of work. Yeah. So let's unpack a little bit what you got there. So Take This. Talk to us about Take This. I bang on about Take This a lot, but let's hear it from yourself.
Yeah, Take This is a mental health nonprofit, the first to form, serving the gaming industry and gaming communities. They run most famously the AFK rooms at PAX conferences, which is a quiet, staffed space to get away from the hustle and bustle of the floor of the conference. You can just find a place to sit and relax. And yeah, I'm their research director, so I spearhead all of their research activities, which is really a great marrying of my interests, video games, and mental health.
Okay, excellent. And then, let's talk about research then. You're a
Yeah.
research director. You're actively doing research, conducting research.
I am.
You've what was the phrase? Recovering academic.
I am. That is the phrase I use. Yeah, well, I was an academic and I strived to be one for a long time. I did my PhD and then a postdoc, and then I had children. And I was still trying to kind of break into the world of academia, but all of my contacts were in Europe and I was now living in America. And to get an academic job, it really is a lot of who you know. There's so many people vying for so few spaces. So my kind of winding road ending up at Take This was actually like the perfect spot for me to land. So, be grateful for the opportunities that you don't get, even when they seem like the thing you really want at the time. So yeah, I'm doing active research now. I'm doing a few different branches. I focus less now on kind of the social impact of gaming, which is what I did in my postdoc and my PhD. And I'm focused more on kind of the darker sides of gaming, things like toxicity and dark participation and that sort of thing is kind of where I am now. But I am trying to do work that both informs the industry to make games a better safe space for everyone, but also provides tools and strategies for players themselves about how to understand and navigate these spaces when the bad actors show up.
Okay, excellent. And then I feel like the content creation stuff is like, I don't know, I kind of want to get into that more a little bit later. So we'll put
Okay.
hang fire there because we've got stuff we can say. So have you been on like what have you been cooking up recently? What's the most recent sort of bits of work? Obviously it's conference season, you know.
Conference season, I will be presenting at GDC in March. Yes, I'm going to be presenting virtually because it's still too much of a thing to travel. I live in Canada and it's a whole thing. I'm going to be presenting on the landscape of extremist behavior in games. So, light and fluffy is how I like to keep it. I do the simple work, which is going to be an interesting talk. And I've collaborated with Alex Newhouse of the Middlebury Institute to do this work, and it's really kind of fascinating and illuminating. Like I said, darker sides of the internet. But on the lighter side, I have also submitted a panel for PAX East, which is at the end of April. I know you, sir, have also submitted some panels for PAX East. So hopefully we can do the light and the dark, gotta bring it back up.
I feel like I have to ask, is the PAX panel about Henry Cavill? Is it about The Witcher?
It's not. It should be. Maybe I'll wear my Witcher dress for the PAX panel. I definitely have a Witcher outfit planned for PAX. I will say
Okay, all right. I was just gonna, like, we had to stop the presses moment now already. Holy heck. Oof. No, it's not about The Witcher. Okay, right.
It's not. It's not.
So I look let you know, let's get the flattery out of the way. Research wise, you are an academic heroine of mine, leading the
Oh.
way. I'm reticent to kind of use the phrase like leading expert. I know it's kind of like almost seen within like a taboo kind of thing. It's kind of the Dunning-Kruger effect, kind of people are labeled as these such articles. But you literally wrote the book, the video get co-edited the debate, video game the debate, like so. For me, oh wow, the research stuff is great. You've worked with some really cool people as well. I've spoken to Dr. Chrissy Cook, the inaugural episode of the podcast. You've worked with her. You've worked with my DOS, Dr. Linda Kay, as well.
I have. Linda's amazing. You're so lucky to have her as a supervisor. She's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't need to tell me.
Yeah. It's funny, game studies is a small family.
Yeah.
I find. Yeah.
I felt like I had a question. I was going somewhere with a question. So, I mean, with all these sort of collaborations and stuff, is there anything that you are sort of looking forward to researching further, or any sort of one you're looking to sort of work with that would be interesting?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of people I'd love to work with who I haven't worked with yet. You know, as my work with Take This has navigated more towards an industry focused work than I'd had in my previous academic life. So I'd really like to do more work with like the ESA, for example, and people within the industry specifically, because the best work that comes out is work where you have independent researchers, either at academic institutions or at nonprofits, working together with others. Other academic institutions, nonprofits, and the industry. And I really am hopeful that we're going to start to see a push. We've already seen it a little bit. The ESA has done some work with the Oxford Internet Institute, for example, in the last couple of years. So I'm really hoping that I will get the opportunity to work with people in the industry to do some of this work.
Okay. And that's like, that I think is the real kind of golden like nugget, right? Like that's what everyone's kind of after. Yeah. That's what we want. Like, yeah. You speak to anyone from research and you'll kind of quickly realize that the links with industry are the key. I feel, anyway.
They really are.
Okay, that's great. Is there anything else that you, sort of, you want to give mention? I know you're editing a new book.
Yes, there's always books kind of floating around in my life. The Video Game Debate actually spawned an entire new series of books called Debates in Media Studies. From Routledge. So we have the Video Game Debate 1 and 2. This year, the Social Media Debate is coming out, edited by Devin Rosen, which is excellent because I read it ahead of time and it's great. And then in the next year, we're going to also have the Virtual Reality Debate and the Mobile Media Debate come out. So there's like several kind of edited books in the pipeline in and around kind of debates in media studies. And I'm really excited for everyone to be able to read those. Because the idea is like the Video Game Debate, it's kind of a foundational text. Like, where can I learn everything I need to know about the social media debates? Tell me about belonging. Tell me about misinformation. Tell me about political movements. Tell me it all and give it to me in a book. So I don't have to look around Google Scholar till the end of time to find all the articles. So it's real exciting.
Okay, awesome. I mean, again, like you just seem to be, and this sounds like a reductive question, but how do you do it all? You're so like you mentioned, you have kids, you're doing all this. Like we'll get onto the content creation stuff as well, but just how what's the secret sauce?
What's the secret? I love what I do. I honestly think that's the secret. I have a passion for doing it. I was talking to my very good friend the other day, Christina. Hi, Christina. And she asked me the same question. She has a job, she has kids. She has a job that she enjoys, but isn't necessarily passionate about. It's just kind of a job that pays the bills. And she's like, how do you do everything that you do? And it's like, I am so, I don't know, lucky if it's the right word. I worked hard for it. I don't know if it's really luck, but to have a job that I'm intrinsically passionate about doing. We're going to talk about the content creation. In my first year of content creation, I created a new video every week. That is, I don't know how I did that, but it was like just, it was rushing forward from me. Like I just wanted to create this stuff, which is a lot different motivation from, you know, going to a job that you don't necessarily enjoy and having to do it all day long.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So you think that passion is the key driver to be able to manage everything? Because I mean, like, you know, I always joke about it, but like, I struggle to like be able to like, I don't know, try and do everything that I need to adult, and then like, work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily do everything the best I possibly could. I have multiple calendars. I have a very supportive spouse. And I have a flexible work schedule. All of those things help. I'm incredibly privileged to have all this set up. You know, I have the microphone and I have a camera and I have everything I need, you know, in my house. I have a 10-month-old baby right now and my spouse is able to watch them while I do this chat with you. So there's a lot of moving parts. I would say though, staying organized and having a calendar is very key to doing all the things.
So I always say that if it's not in my calendar, it's not happening.
No, it's true. I won't remember it and I won't do it. You're so right.
like that is, it's the secret to victory is definitely a good,
yes,
calendar, right? Or calendars.
Multiple. I have multiple shared calendars. I see all my colleagues. Yeah. Their dates so I can work around them. Yeah. Lots of calendars, lots of planners. I have like at least 3 notebooks next to me. Like I have things everywhere keeping me on track.
For me, it really just is the key. I mean, I'm assuming you've had this, but I've also experienced it where it's like people's like, oh, do you want to do a thing? And I'll be like, yeah, yeah, sure. It sounds great. And then I'll be like, when? And I'm like, well, March is out. Like,
oh, for like, sure.
Can yeah, we schedule this for like 2 months?
I'm trying to schedule a thing right now. And they were like, how do your Tuesdays look? I'm like, no, can't be a Tuesday. We're going to have to figure something else out. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's definitely something. So again, I feel like this is maybe a silly question,
but
you know, I've heard you on a few various podcasts. I've heard your journey. You've traveled around a lot, which is really epic.
Yes.
So you're in Canada now. You're from Texas. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You studied in Germany.
Did my postdoc in Germany. Did my PhD. England.
Oh, yeah, up at York.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. One of the things I like to break down on this podcast is like, well, why? So why are you doing what you're doing?
Yeah.
So as someone who has not studied outside of the Merseyside area, for example, like, why were you so globe-trotting in what you did?
Yeah.
Can you maybe break into that for us?
I can. You know, I was born and raised in Texas. I got my bachelor's at the University of Texas at Dallas. And I knew at the time, my path changed, that I wanted to be a therapist. And back in those days, when you applied for graduate school, it was literally like a packet of information. Like, your supervisors had to hand write your, well, they typed and printed, but they had to sign them and mail them like in an envelope. It was a big deal. So I applied to 6 different schools for my master's. Based on the fact I wanted to go to a counseling psychology program, I got accepted to 2, and they were both in California. So that's when I went to California. Then when I got my master's, I realized I want a PhD, and I applied to 2 programs, York and Stanford. And the reason I chose the 2 was that they were, you know, leading edge. Stanford was the only people who had game studies research at the time. York actually was for my supervisor. He was doing work, and he was playing around in media studies, but he was in the psychology department at Cambridge. And when I messaged him, he said, I'm not at Cambridge anymore, I'm at York. So that's how I ended up at York. I was applying for the supervisor. Okay. But to be fair, I always was obsessed with England. My dad went to Oxford once when I was a kid. I didn't get to go, but he came back with an Oxford sweater, and it has, you know, like the coat of arms. There was just something about it. It was very romanticized in my mind. The odds of getting into any PhD program are pretty small. So when I got in, it was like a no brainer. I didn't get into Stanford, but that's beside the point. I would have gone, to York anyway. And then when I was at York, we talk about conference season. There was a conference coming up. It's called the Multiplayer Conference in Germany. Game studies, again, was just taking up off the ground. I went to that conference, and the person holding it was the person who ended up becoming my postdoc supervisor. So like I said, it's a small world, and it's, you know, I happened to meet them. We got on, they did games. I needed a postdoc. They had positions, and it just kind of happened. No, I don't speak German. I'm very little. But I moved there anyway, because I was young and in love and had no kids, and why not? And now I'm back in this side of the world, but in Canada, not for my job. My husband's job actually brought us to Canada, because Take This is based in Seattle.
Okay, interesting. So, I mean, like, that's like wild. Just be like, well, you know, I mean, because firstly, I say this as a Brit, but like, oh God, why England? England is awful.
I love England. Listen, if I could live anywhere in the world, I love where I live now. I would leave for England. It's the only place I'd leave it for. I love England so much. I love that it's always damp. I love the accents. I love the dreariness. I want like a cottage in Yorkshire with like chickens. I don't know. I would love to go back to England. I miss it so much.
I mean, you know, I mean, that would make like collab easier. So I'm not like down in that. But like, oh God, like,
yeah.
Sweet Lord, England is not, it's not a great place.
Well, you know, but you're from there, so you have a different perspective on it. I'm from Texas. Almost anything is better. So let's be honest. Texas is so dang hot. I don't know how people even live there.
Well, I mean, heat is not a friend of mine, so fair play on that one, I guess. Fair play.
Yes.
Okay, then. So that's firstly just really ambitious, and that's really cool. I'm low-key envious of that, just like that, the daring nature of being like, well, I don't speak German, YOLO, we'll go, yeah, that's what the kids say, right? Like, yeah, let's just go Germany.
people were like, you speak German? And I'm like, no. And they were like, and you're moving there? And I'm like, yeah, I'll figure it out. I did. I figured it out.
And again, this is something that I know you've covered a little bit, but you wanted to go down sort of a clinical kind of route, and then you realized that wasn't for you, and then you were like, okay, video games. This is a question that even in, you know, as recently as me starting my PhD, like, why video games, right?
Yeah.
What was that for you? What was the reason for that? Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I'll tell you my reason, but I will also tell you a side tangent. When I did my PhD interview, why video games was like the critical question of my interview. I wanted to become a therapist. I went to do my master's. And obviously, when you go to become a therapist, you do therapy, obviously, with other people. And I was seeing a lot of people concerned about World of Warcraft. And you've probably heard me tell this story before, but I saw multiple parents concerned about World of Warcraft. And I was playing lots of World of Warcraft at the time. So after like multiple people told me, like, I'm really concerned this is doing some kind of long-term lasting damage. Selfishly, I was concerned that I was doing some kind of long-term damage to myself. And when I went to look at what the research, what the state of it was, there wasn't any. There's one or two papers from Stanford, from Nikki and his work. And that was it. And I was like, okay, well, this is a space that is wide open for research. I ended up doing my master's thesis about seeing a client who used World of Warcraft to mitigate his depression. And then I looked for, a research-based program that would be open to doing game studies. Because at the time, that was not a thing. You flash forward to today, there are hundreds of programs focused specifically on game studies. There are dozens of labs across the globe, state-of-the-art labs that are focused specifically on game studies, but it just wasn't the case back in 2008 when I was looking for programs. So when I did my PhD interview, I had pitched this project looking at the impact of games on adaptive functioning, so physical, social, psychological functioning. And I went on and on and on about it for like an hour in my interview. And then finally at the end, not my supervisor, but another guy on the call was like, why? What are you going to do with this information? You keep telling me that games are important. What are you going to do with it? And thank God everything happens for a reason with my master's program, because I paused and I was like, you give the information to the clinicians. And they were like, oh, that's a good answer. And I was like, oh, thank God. Because I did get it. I know it was like, I felt like that entire interview was peaked at that moment. And I was like, oh God, Rachel, come through with an answer. So you always had to justify why. And today I feel like you have less of an uphill battle with having to justify why. But so for me, it was, I never thought I'd be so lucky. Like, I've loved games my whole life. I never thought of it as a research career until I realized that it was a potential concern that parents and clinicians were having. And the answers just weren't there.
Okay. So, I mean, like, again, that's an excellent story. Like, you know, and I think that is at its heart, like, I don't want to be like, it sounds cliche, but a noble cause, you know, but I think that's the right kind of attitude to go at it, right? Like, the thirst for knowledge. Well, like, okay, let's understand why, but like, but what, but yeah. Why? And then that's a brilliant answer when asked, well, what do you do with this, right? Like, that's
top. My brain came through. Me. I know, I was really happy that, but it was true. Like, that's exactly the point. Like, you give it to the clinician and then give it to the parents. And honestly, that was my motivation for writing the video game debate at the beginning, was like, finally, we've studied games long enough that we have this information. Let's put it together in a book. And what I realize now in hindsight is I created a very good textbook, but it's still too long for parents and clinicians, which is why I wrote a shorter one a few years later. But yeah, it's always been my motivation.
Excellent. I mean, like, you mentioned, like, you know, the dedicated kind of spaces for like games research, which is excellent. And you do see that. I mean, the IGGI, you'll have a base in York as well as down south. Yeah.
I paved the way.
I was going to say, you study in York and then suddenly IGGI is a thing in your, I mean.
If only that was there when I was there. If only. I know, I'm trying to get to it.
I know correlation doesn't equal causation, but.
I feel like. Yeah, you know, it's a really great program, that program. We actually had one of the, Matt Whitby, who's a PhD student there, interned at Take This last summer, and we did some work together. And if you're listening, anyone at that program, I'm really trying to get invited. I'm really trying to get invited to come speak. I would love to return to my alma mater and see all the wonderful people studying games. That would be great.
Well, excellent. Because, I mean, okay, so this is perhaps more flattery. But, yeah. You know, obviously the video game debate was one of the things that... Because believe it or not, as I think is part and parcel of a PhD journey, I was like, okay, I'm going to look in this thing. And then before I'd start, I was like, okay, let's expand my own horizons a little bit. And was like listening to the Psychology of Games podcast, Dr. Yes. Jamie Madigan, it's a big one, huge, literally like second episode, Dr. Linda Kay's on it. I was like, no way, that's my supervisor. I was like, you know, like that kind of Spider-Man meme. And whole host of great people on it, including yourself. And I was like, oh, okay, this seems pretty neat. Then, you know, on the old internet. And then, oh, the video game debate. This is core reading. Let's get the library to order that in. And then it was like weirdly like that, as you say, that kind of small family kind of element that I realized that you'd work with Linda and all sorts of things like that. So again, this is where the flattery comes in. I mentioned before I was a bit nervous starting this episode, academic heroine, and just heaping the praise on you. But it sounds daft, but like I remember when you followed me back on Twitter. It was like that was like a big day in the office. And we actually bumped into each other at the IGGI conference last year now. Online.
Yeah.
But because they were using Gather, it really was like a bumping into.
Yeah. You showed me where to go. I was lost.
I was giddy as a goat.
You're like, so funny.
I was like, this is it. We've peaked.
Our paths have crossed. Well, I hope that, you know, this year we can actually bump into each other in real life at the IGGI conference. We'll see. Also, talk about small worlds. I first found Linda because I heard her interview on the Psychology of Games podcast, and I reached out to her and I was like, we should work together because we do like the same things. That's where I first heard her and met her, and the rest is history.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So the root of all goodness is podcasts.
Jamie Madigan. Oh, podcast. Yeah.
I mean, sorry. I didn't want to say that, but you know,
Jamie will love that. Jamie will love that.
That's the clip. There we go. We've got it in the bag.
Yeah. Tag him. Yeah. Tag him. He'll love it. Yeah.
There you go. You heard it here first. The root of all Psychology Games collaboration is Jamie Madigan.
Yes.
Jokes aside, though, I mean, I'll actually be fair. The Psychology of Games podcast with Jamie Madigan, but also when he Barrett B. Anderson, one of those episodes actually like really influenced the work I'm doing on like procedural rhetoric in games. So that's like a big component of my PhD. So I mean, big up Jamie. He knows how to talk to the podcast.
Cool. And big up to you too, because I'm telling you that podcasts are a great way to learn about what people are doing, to meet people in the field. I say it's a small family. I mean, there really isn't so many of us. And it's great that you and Jamie and other people host podcasts like this so we can meet other people who are doing the work and learn a bit about them, like personally and professionally. I mean, I did watch the one with Chrissy. I've worked with her before, but I learned a lot from watching that. So thanks to you too.
Well, I mean, you know, so there were no one studying video games at my uni, Edge Hill. Then I started. Now there's three. So
see, there you go, making waves.
You just you start a movement, and then it happens. You know, how it is.
Only takes one.
Okay, so I'm conscious of the content because we usually sort of go work, non-work, and then sort of jab by anything else. But again, I want to come back to the content because we're going to come back to that.
Yes, we will. We'll come back to that.
So when you are not working, and I always joke that I don't have like free time anymore or spare time. I don't like those terms. I always say I just have non-work time.
Yes.
Because there's always something to be doing, especially when you're doing more than one thing. So what do you like to get up to when you're not actively like working? Oh, and that includes all the content. Sleep. Okay.
That's it. I have three kids. If I have a quiet moment, I honestly am probably sleeping.
Because that's the best use of the time?
It's the best use of the time. No, I don't know if it's the best use of the time. But, you know, basic needs are at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid. I know that that's kind of a debunked theory. But anyway, what am I doing? I like to read. I like to read YA fiction as kind of my go-to genre because it's really easy to read and really quick. I like to watch Netflix, the eternal backlog that will never be all the way watched. And on
Sorry,
occasion,
I just want to point
go
out
ahead.
for like anyone who's watching this, my brain really had to process what YA meant for a second. I had to really
Oh,
think
young
about
adult, young adult,
that. I was
young
like, wait,
adult
I got there,
fiction.
but someone like for anyone watching that back,
Yeah,
I
took
did
a
have a dumb
minute.
face.
Not in the know. Get to follow all those people on TikTok. yeah. And what? Oh, games. Very rarely I'll get a time to play games. But the problem is that the games that I like to play the most are role playing games that require 300 hours to complete. So it's hard to find enough time to sit down and even remember what I was doing to get into it and play because I don't have that much time, really, non-work time.
Okay. Have you played anything good recently?
I've been playing, what was I playing today? Bowser's Fury with my
Oh,
children.
nice.
Quite good. And I got the new Mario Party Superstars for Christmas. I've been playing, I wouldn't say that's good. Mario Party, I feel like, is a good way to ruin relationships, but it's entertaining. It's entertaining.
Well, I mean, you did stream a few hours of Mario Party, you and Dr. Sarah Hayes. A little
We
while back
did.
for Take This, that was indeed entertaining.
Oh, I don't doubt that it's entertaining for other people to watch. Yeah. Oh, I did play Unpacking last year. That was like my big thing. I haven't really played fully through a game in so long, which is a wonderful indie game, and it took a couple hours to play. Did you play Unpacking?
I have not played Unpacking yet,
Okay, it's
unfortunately.
very good. It's very good.
Yeah, I mean
Highly recommend.
the backlog. I've kind of gotten to the point now where I feel like the backlog is almost in of itself a guilty pleasure. Like I love,
It
like I like
right?
owning these games. I'm like, oh, I own this now. I could play this
Yeah.
whenever I want to. I just don't have the opportunity or the time.
I know. That's how I feel about my Netflix backlog.
Because like
People like, have
yourself, sorry,
you?
go on.
Oh, yeah.
I was gonna.
No, I'm just gonna. I was just gonna say, people are like, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And I'm like, no. And it's like the same with games, right? Have you played Unpacking? No, but I own it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was going to say was, like yourself, I'm a big RPG fan, which I
Yes.
think is a nice segue into what I'm going to say
Yes.
is perhaps two of everyone's favorite words, Final Fantasy.
Okay. For the people who can't see the video, apologies. For the people who can't, I have Celeste and Locke, and I have the Final Fantasy VI Moogle. I wore my Final Fantasy earrings today because I know that we have a mutual love for Final Fantasy.
I mean, it's the stuff. It's the stuff, right? It's the goods.
It really is. I'm not gonna argue.
Okay, so let's get straight into this is where you just hang up.
Yes.
What's the best Final Fantasy, right? Now I know your answer, but please relay your answer for the benefit of the listener who may not know.
Is Final Fantasy VI is the best.
All right.
Is the followed
Now
closely by seven and then probably ten.
Okay, now you're saying the best. Okay.
Yes.
Do you mean your favorite? Because those are different things.
I mean, oh, I think it's the best and my favorite. Yeah, I just don't think there's another set of interwoven storylines that is quite as moving and beautiful that you find in Final Fantasy VI. Like people might say 10 is the best. I remember when 10 came out with the voice acting. It was a game changer. I remember when I plugged it in and we started and they were like speaking words. I remember thinking like, oh my God, this changes everything. But nothing is like the characters of six. So yes, I'll say the best and my favorite.
Okay, so this is okay. Oh, I'm nervous. Okay, so
Oh boy.
I say, hand on heart, my favorite is seven. It just because it's the first one I played. You know, obviously it's quite common for everyone. Like it was the first one that went big in the West, unless you were lucky
Yes,
enough on the
that's true.
SNES and happened to have a copy. You know, so I think that's my bet. It's held together with duct tape, but I love it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now the best, objectively speaking. And I think this is,
Yeah.
I'm saying this as someone who's completed 1 through 10.
Yeah.
So objectively speaking, I think 9 is the best.
Oh.
I have a penchant.
Nine?
I have a penchant
Oh.
for steampunk. It's a little bit biased, but
I like steampunk.
But it goes back to the roots with fixed job classes. The characters are great. The music is, I think, arguably like some of the best in the series. Just you could just spin it on CD and it's great. I'm not saying you can't do that with the others. I mean, Tara's theme, Tina's theme, depending on where you're from. Fantastic piece of music. The ability system is fantastic. It arguably has the best Chocobo minigame of the series. The story is genuinely massive. And you know, I think, again, I, like most people, I think, in the West, I played 7, 8, 9 in that order. And I think it definitely stands up a lot better compared to 8. Hate gets a lot of... 8 gets a lot of hate, speak properly. Perhaps like unjustly. It. It's just a little bit different. Yeah. But for me, like playing those three and then playing 9 was just like, whoa. Then having played the rest, it really goes back to its roots. The card game is wild, but like hilarious to watch. And I just feel like it has so much. I also think in a weird way, not ahead of its time, but... when you think about how popular like high fantasy, medieval fantasy is now, like it was already it was already on that track. So
that's
true. I think objectively, I mean, even like it's optional boss fights and subquests, I think are some of the best in the series.
Well, you have a right to your opinion, sir. I will say I've played 2 through 14. I haven't played, that's not true. Wait. 14 the MMO. I haven't played the MMO, and I haven't played 15. It's still in the package because I have games.
11 is also the MMO.
Yes, I didn't play that one either. I didn't play any of the MMOs, but of all the ones I've played, 9 is the only one I didn't like.
Oh, can I ask why?
I just couldn't get into it. No particular reason. There was just something about it. It just didn't click. I don't know why. I love all the other ones. I don't even think I finished it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about 9. Maybe it just came at a weird time. I loved 8, though. I loved the card game in 8. I know 8 does get a lot of hate. I really enjoyed 8 a lot. I don't know. It's just like the one that got lost. The lost Final Fantasy.
So where's the petition for me to change this? Like, I want to live stream.
Maybe I should play it. Maybe I should. Maybe that we could do that in the future. We can live stream Final Fantasy IX. Yeah.
I mean, you can play it on toaster at this point, so you know you can get it on everything. Like,
yeah, that's true. Maybe I need to revisit it. I've not given it a fair chance. I mean, I did own it, and I definitely played like a significant amount of hours into it, and I was just kind of like, meh.
I do think like the order in which you play the games and like the versions you play are also like that's a really important factor, right? Like, you know, I mean, you can get 7, 8, 9 on anything and everything at this point. They've recently released the Pixel remasters, which
of 6. It does release that one.
Lot of opinions from the community of varying sort of sizes there. I'll be honest, I think like they're great if you have never touched the series before. Right. But I mean, personally, from like an accessibility point of view, the font's awful. Let's just chuck that to one side. But like I've got like the GBA versions of 1, 2, 5 and 6. Which are considered sort of the some of the best versions of those. I know there's a lot of debate around the best version of each one. Let's not start that. the DS versions of 3 and 4, and obviously just PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 for up to 10, and then 12.
Yeah.
And I do have 10, 10, 2 on PS3 also.
Well, who then, from all these Final Fantasies, like, what characters do you like love? Who are like your top 3? Like, characters you just love from the different games?
Oh, across all of them? That's a question.
Yeah, across all of them.
Oh, I mean, I was a moody, emo teenage boy, so Cloud has to be up as one of them.
Cloud's amazing. Yeah, Cloud's one.
Vivi, my boy Vivi. Oh,
yeah.
That little black mage, he owns a part of everyone's
heart. He's the only one I liked from 9, to be fair.
Oh, gosh, who else? I mean, I really like Cecil as well, because I mean, like, Paladin Cecil, you know, me and him have a bit of a resemblance. I'm not saying I'm from the moon or nothing, but, like, I always resonated with that as a younger person. The whole point of the series is that they've got such great... I mean, 1 and 3 outstanding, 2 wasn't... I mean, the story was a bit watery on 2, because it was the first one they gave us a story too.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I think like from four onwards, you really start to have a huge cast of characters that are great. And some of the moments that happen in the game, I mean, you know, Locke, Celeste, Terra, you know, all great characters, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
And I think this is something that I think, like, I played 7 and then played 6. You gain a greater appreciation for 7 when you play 6 because of how much 6 informed what happened in 7.
Yeah, and 7 too. Like, I mean, I played them all in order because I am that old. But I remember when 7 came out, yeah, it was such a big... It was kind of like the step from 9 to 10, the step from 6 to 7, right? It was really a big deal to see such a change in the graphics and the storyline of 6 and the, you know, the death of Aeris. Like that was a big cultural phenomenon that happened. So yeah, 7 is very special. My husband would say 7 is the best. We have, you know, a bit of a spousal argument there, but yeah, I think playing them in order does give you a better appreciation for each one that comes after it.
And that's why I would say, like, I think if you play them all in order, you really could say, well, everything after 6 is borrowed from 6, so 6 is therefore right. better. You know, like the limit right. system was introduced. Magicite right. is a few letters away from Materia. Like,
right, right. It's the same idea. Yeah,
yeah. You read like the even like the story like has quite a few parallels in like the archetype of the villain and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at 7's compilation, let's go real meta. And you look at, you know, the movie, the books, the other games in the series, it becomes a slightly different animal. But yeah. You know, people have opinions on compilation as well.
But that's because, like you said, 7 was just what put it on the map for a lot of people had not played Final Fantasies until 7 came out. I mean, we were in the know. But, 7 is the first one you played?
Yes.
Is 7 the first one you played? Okay. Well, you're in the know now.
Have you played the remake?
I have the remake. I've played maybe 10, 15 hours. I've played enough in there to know who Chadley is.
Yes, our boy Chadley.
He's a character. Yeah. I haven't finished it because I have no time, but I've really tried. I'm maybe like 15, 20 hours in.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. No, I mean, I really enjoyed the remake. Like, I think a lot of people played it and Animal Crossings during lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah,
just sunk 100 hours into both real easy.
Animal Crossing definitely took more hours out of my life, but I could play it with my children, so mom life.
Fair Gotta have those priorities, I guess. So this is again another hot topic, right?
Yes.
Final Fantasy 7-6, would you want a remake?
I don't think so. I think that the art style, like everything about 6 holds up real well. Like you said, like I don't even think we needed the digital pixel remaster. Like I think it holds up. 7 was an odd era for a game to come out, right? Very angular. And I think that it was well suited for the remake is absolutely beautiful visually. I don't feel the need. I used to really be on the bandwagon if they should remake it, but I think that it's perfect the way it is.
Now, obviously you've played a little bit of the remake. I controversially said this recently on stream, but I think Chrono Trigger would be really well suited to that playstyle.
Yes, I love Chrono Trigger. What a great game. Yes, I would love to see a Chrono Trigger remake, redesign. Especially, too, when you talk to a lot of people about the game, like the role-playing game that like got them into loving role-playing, Chrono Trigger has got to be the number one kind of across the board that people go to. Like, so there's so much love for that game.
Oh, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, it's got time travel. Akira Toriyama did the artwork for it. You know, obviously, you can see Dragon Ball Z behind me. Big fan of that. You know, so like, yeah, it's a huge, huge game. I admit, a little bit regretfully, but I actually only finished that at the end of last year.
Oh my gosh, really?
I know. I had it on DS like when it came out, and it was one of those because I'm a bad gamer. I got stuck, put it down, played something else, came back to it a few years later, got unstuck. Got to like the end, and you know, I mean, it's an old game, but so it's not really spoilers. But the final sort of segments of boss fights, and was like, "What? and then put it down again. And so I finally resolved, the end of last year, to be like, no, I'm going to finish this. We're going to do our business. We're going to sort it out. And I finally beat the game.
Well, good job. I'm glad that you finally finished it. That is an accomplishment.
I can tick it off and say, right, we did it. We did the business. That's the main thing. Okay, so are we still friends after the Final Fantasy debate?
We're still friends. We're still friends. We're allowed to have different.
That was a source of anxiety for this interview.
Me too. We made it through.
Okay, so I feel like we can't mention Netflix. I think now's the time to get our content on. Right.
Okay.
So firstly, let's talk about Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist, yes. YouTube channel that I started in the pandemic, because going back to what inclined me to write the video game debate and get my PhD in the first place was about getting this information out of academia, getting this information to clinicians and then parents. We did the video game debate. It became a great academic book. I wrote a shorter version, The Parents Guide to Video Games, which is great, but it's still a book and it wasn't like picked up wildly. And I thought, you know why? People don't want to read. People want to watch video. So I started a YouTube channel at the start of the pandemic to basically take all this information I have in my mind and make them into digestible videos around the science of games. So video games and addiction, video games and aggression, like what are these debates and what are these hot topics that people have? What's a loot box? And putting them into short little digestible videos. So yeah, that's where it, what it is and how it came to be.
And since then, it's developed somewhat. I mean, I've watched a lot of Zeitgeist content. Mm-hmm. I've even got some of the merch here with me.
Yes.
I'll show for the benefit of the tape, I'm holding a Zeitgeist T-shirt that reads "Be excellent to each other and always cite your sources."
That's right.
It's an excellent
You and I
t-shirt.
Have the only two. So those are limited edition.
No special reason. I just ordered mine really quickly.
Then they took it down. They think it's infringing on Bill and Ted, but it's not. I have sought to fight that claim.
But in the meantime,
yes.
Limited edition. So
limited edition. Two. We have the two that exist.
And if we keep it that way, it's a super collector's item, and I'm happy. So...
Yeah, exactly.
But since then, you've developed a whole host of other content. It's not just like those very good digestible snack bits of psychology information. Mm-hmm. You do some other stuff. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, I branched out a little bit. So I do a lot of the research stuff. And then I have started doing a new show this year with Dr. Sarah Hayes called Reaction Time, where Dr. Sarah Hayes is a licensed clinician. I am not a licensed clinician, but I have a master's in counseling. And I've done a lot of my own therapy. And we watch therapists in media and we comment about how terrible they are, basically. It's basically what we do. So that's been loads of fun to add this year. And then also I've done a couple like playthrough psychology of unpacking, for instance. And I played through the new theme hospital. What's it called? Two-Point Hospital. So I'm doing a couple of like gaming content as well, mostly as an excuse to schedule in time for me to play games.
That's how you do.
You know, like you said, we go back to the schedule. If it's not scheduled, it's not happening.
And that includes the fun stuff.
It does. Yeah. Sadly. It does.
I'm a big fan just of you and your work generally, because I think that goes without saying at this point in the episode. But Reaction Time is really fun. It's really funny.
I think
is it just the two at the moment that are out? Both
it's
on
just
like
two right now.
Yeah. So I've watched both the first one In Treatment, which fun fact, I actually quote In Treatment as one of the shows combined with Frasier that really inspired me to pursue psychology as a career. Sounds really honked up considering how messed up In Treatment is.
It's a good show.
It's a good show though, right? So just for those that don't know, In Treatment, the original series was about a therapist and his clients. But it was shown on TV at half an hour every night of the week, Monday through Friday. And it went on for like weeks. Mm-hmm. I've got it on DVD. It's like so, so long. Gabriel Byrne stars. It's a great, great show.
really good.
In terms of its like cinematic sort of value, if you will, like that, that was an audacious project. But it's also really interesting. Very, very human stories. But you did an episode of Reaction Time on that and on the reboot of In Treatment, which I will say I have not seen.
Me either, until I did the episode.
But you're on the most recent one. You all were like, yeah, bringing up like Elektra and Oedipus complexes, like bringing up some Freud. I was like, oh, this is psychology 101. Get the popcorn out.
You know, Freud comes out more than you would think, actually. And I think it's just because like writers in the writer's room, that's like all they know about psychology, maybe. Because I feel like in almost every episode of Reaction Time, there's something Freudian happening.
Yeah, I mean, Freudian in the media is a common, it's a thing, right? It happens a lot. You've also teased a clip of you, Dr. Sarah Hayes, and Dr. B watching Frasier.
We're going to do two this year. We've already filmed them, two episodes of Frasier. Sarah's never seen Frasier.
Which is criminal.
So, I know, but also really interesting because Dr. B and I could quote every episode of Frasier and she's never seen it. So watching it with her like fresh eyes is really interesting perspective.
So Frasier is one of those shows that like in the UK is like on at like 9 o'clock in the morning, just on Channel 4. And they'll just show like either like two or three episodes. I have watched through, I think, the entire season, like at least three or four times, like all 11 seasons. Because I also own it on DVD because I love it. So how do you feel about it now, having watched some, like, and hearing through fresh eyes? If you can, don't mind spoiling it for us a little bit.
Oh, I won't, no. I mean, Frasier is also one of those shows that every few years I watch them all again because I love it so much. I still love it. I have the nostalgia factor, though, and that's, like, a totally different... in our brains, right? Like the chemicals that are released when I see Frasier, it's very warm and fuzzy and nostalgic for me. And I still find the banter between him and Niles, it's just so spot on. Like the psychology jokes, like the little short one-liners that you only really get if you're in psychology. Like there's one instance where they're had some kind of bet and Niles lost and the scene starts and Frasier's like, come on, Niles, say it. And he's like, Freud is the poor man's young. And he's like, ha ha ha. And it's just like those things, those moments are just so great. Sarah has a different perspective, which you will see on the episodes, having fresh eyes and watching it in 2022. I think I just still have I see there's obviously some problematic comments about women and people of different nationalities and that sort of thing. It's an artifact of its time, of the early 90s, for sure, with some of the jokes, especially from the father character. But Niles and Frasier, they're great.
You see, maybe like my own weird sort of nostalgia, and I'm kind of like being fed on so much of it, but I kind of feel like on the most part, it kind of stands quite well. I mean, Roz is an empowered female character who is sexually active. And, like, there's a bit of banter, but there's also about Frasier not getting any action, you know, and that's their joke. But, like, she's an empowered woman who holds up. She's a, you know, single mother through half of the later seasons and, like, is held in high regard. She's still, like, an awesome character.
Yeah. You're right. There are a lot of jokes at her expense, but she doesn't care. In the show, like, she's just like, whatever.
Or we'll rip back twice as hard because, like, that's a her and Niles go toe-to-toe quite a few points.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Like Marty, you know, John Mahoney, one of our own, but from Blackpool, I'm going to point that out.
Oh, wow.
You know, he's excellent. Marty does have a few, like...
He has a few, yeah.
Which is of the character, you know, retired sort of cop.
But wouldn't be on TV these days.
Wouldn't,
some of the things he says. Yeah.
Camps wouldn't make it. You know, it does have a few diversity issues. There's not like a whole like load of representation, but I think compared to other shows of its time, I think my opinion is that it stands up a little bit better. I also like the reverse of the coin you were mentioning, and that I feel like I can watch it with, like, say, my mum who doesn't know as much about psychology, and like Marty will make a wisecrack about Frasier and Niles chatting psychology, and we can both laugh at different things. And I think that's the genius in the writing.
Yeah, the different generations. Yeah, I agree. And like the white collar, blue collar, there's a lot of dynamics. And there's lots of jokes from Daphne about England and the weather and English people. And now that I've lived in England, I can get those jokes a little bit more. They're funny.
Yeah, no, they are all funny, especially like with them being from Manchester, which even here is known as a wet, grey city.
Yes, yes, full of ruffians like her brothers.
Robbie Coltrane is one of her brothers, and like that's like he's a well-known actor and absolutely, you know, Hagrid for Pete's sake.
Yeah,
you know, some of the guest stars that are in the show are incredible.
Yeah,
across you know, like the phone-ins, which a lot of people don't realize are other celebrities having a laugh, as well as like the guest stars, like Woody Harrelson in like a Cheers sort of throwback episode happens. Like, there's so much good stuff in there.
Great show. Highly recommend, if you know.
Yeah, sorry, that's just like 10 minutes on just why we like Frasier. Okay, so what I know you've been waiting for. We talked about content creation. We talked about Netflix has been dropped. Let's talk about one of your other accolades. The one and only Cavill
Influencer. One and only. This is my claim to fame. Look, Chris, I do a lot of things, but this is the most important. Of all the things I do. Yes, I love Henry Cavill. And it started out as a joke. I was late to the game watching The Witcher. It was out for at least a year before I saw it. The game, I'd obviously been exposed to the game. My husband played it. It came out right around the time I had my first child. And I actually very much enjoy watching other people play games. And I would watch him play it. So I was familiar with, you know, the game. And everyone was like, you should watch the show, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, whatever. I'm like, fine. One day I sat down and I watched it. And that was, you know, the rest is history. I was completely enthralled. I loved it. Obviously, Henry Cavill is amazing as Geralt of Rivia. And I couldn't get enough of it. So I made some kind of offhand comment once in one interview about escapism in games versus escapism in Netflix, and how escapism in games is seen as something negative, but escapism into Netflix isn't. And I said, I recently binge watched The Witcher and, you know, no one sees a problem with it. I said, maybe my husband has a problem that I'm escaping into Henry Cavill. That was the joke and it got laughs and it was funny. And then I just kind of rode that train to the point where I am today. And if you watch my YouTube videos, you will see that Henry Cavill gets a lot. He lives rent free in my mind and he's in a lot of the videos, you know, about neuroscience, about things you don't think he's really related to. And yet here he is. He's just his face constantly
somehow just shoehorned in there.
Somehow just shows up. Digital Duck Games described my show Zeitgeist as science with a side of thirst. And I think he's right.
I mean, you know, fair sells, right? Like,
yeah,
I mean, Henry Cavill is a good looking lad, let's be fair.
He is, and he's English, and his dog, like, and he plays Warhammer. There's a lot to like.
He builds PCs.
Yeah, I mean, if I were single and we were in the same circles, he would absolutely be my type, you know, regardless of movie star status. So I mean, I would like him anyway, so it's just a natural extension of life. I don't know. But yes.
Netflix, if you're listening, let me just... No. So the realm, the power of Dr. Rachel Cohut's Cavill Influence.
Yes.
I did not watch The Witcher until you were a Cavill Influencer.
Oh.
So I have since...
Look at that. You see Netflix?
So I have since watched both seasons.
Oh.
And literally, like just the other day, I added Witcher 3 to my wish list, and it was on sale yesterday, so I now own the game.
Love to see it. You see, my influencing has no bounds.
So I'm going to throw up a general spoiler warning. There'll be a the video will be timestamped. The audio, I'll insert a sound of some description. But let's just get into the show, okay?
Yes.
Because obviously, Henry Cavill is one thing. As I say, good looking lad. Does a lot, you know, and I would genuinely, I enjoyed season 2 more than season 1.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mainly because, and I googled this afterwards, and this is quite a controversial thing, but might have been because, like, I didn't, like, give it, like, 100% attention, because, as if I have time. But it took me far too long to realize season 1 was multiple timelines.
I had a hard time with that, too, and I think it helped my husband had already seen it, right? So he could explain to me, like, this is the past, this is the future. I'm like, what is going on? Yeah.
Legit, it was like season 8. I was like, I've already seen this.
I know, Did I
click episode 1 instead? And then I realized. So I mean, you know, to describe The Witch, it rode that GOT wave, you know, the Game of Thrones wave. It's lots of sexy people doing violent and slash or sexy things. And it's a pleasurable watch. It's a pleasurable watch. Enjoyable.
It's very entertaining.
Magic. Yeah. The second season, I honestly think was better. I kind of had the joke of, like, do you reckon Geralt would act the same way if he was given an iPhone as opposed to a live Siri? I feel he would still have the same emotional connection to it, at least at the start.
The Witcher! Come on.
But I mean, yeah, it's good. It's just like, it sounds really reductive, but it was like, yeah, it was just really good.
It's exceptional. Netflix, are you listening? It's exceptional, says I. Yeah, you know, the thing about the show is that it's so immersive to me. And I think it's because all the acting is just so good, in a similar way of Game of Thrones. Although I will say, Game of Thrones took me 3 episodes to get into it. I watched the first one and like when it had first come out, and there were so many characters and I had no idea what these people were. And I was like, there's too many people. I don't know who's related. Like it's too many notes. And I didn't watch it for like a year. And then people were like, you have to watch it. And it took me a good 3 episodes to get into it. But Witcher had me in like, I don't know, 2 minutes. I was sold.
I mean, like, I watched it. I was like, yeah, because it sounds that, but I feel like you could watch that and not know it was a game and go, this would make a great game.
Maybe.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like that is a reaction you could have. It's based on books. I was like, I'd read this. This seems pretty cool. Like,
oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to start reading them to my daughter, I think. Yeah. I haven't read the books, but I'm ready and willing.
Yeah, it's really good high fantasy. I mean, Yeah. Dr. Cowart reads Witcher. Let's make that happen.
Okay, Netflix, I hope these are all your clips that you put out into the universe. We're going to tag Netflix. We're going to tag Netflix Witcher. I would love to read. I have a very good microphone. I can read. Okay.
So, I mean, I think that we should make that happen. That should be a thing.
I'm on board.
But yeah, like it was just good. I mean, I have a few niggles with it. You know, like the show, you know, a little bit, but yeah, but like generally enjoyable. I think everyone should give it a go, especially if you're into the whole, you know, sexy people doing, you know, magical stuff.
And like cool creatures and sorcerers and sorceresses. Yeah, it's cool.
I do think, like, you know, it's well poised for season 3. I'll happily watch season 3. I do kind of feel like, and maybe it relates to someone who's just consumed a lot of fantasy, but I did kind of like, I've seen this plot before. Bits of this plot before.
Yeah, maybe because you consume a lot of... I mean, there are similar themes, just like all the Final Fantasy games, right? There are definitely similar things that you see in, like, different, you know, Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and Witcher and, like, you know, there are similar things there, but it's all enjoyable.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, you can enjoy, like, apple pie, but it doesn't reduce your enjoyment when you have the next slice.
That's true. You know, I do like apple pie.
What do you have it with, though? Custard or ice cream? That's the question.
Custard is such an English thing, and I love it. So if I was in England, I would take custard, but I'm not going to find that here. So ice cream.
Wait, you don't have custard in Canada?
It's hard to find. No. It's, like, really hard to find. Like, mince pie with custard at Christmas time? Yeah, you can't find that here, but I dream of it. From when I lived in England.
I'm genuinely perplexed.
Yeah, so if I come to York and we see each other, you've got to take me out for something with custard. Because, it's not very common here.
Wow, that's knocked me for 6, I'll be fair.
It's a tragedy, I know.
It's just like vanilla sauce.
Yeah.
It's like all it is. Okay, wow.
Yeah. Even clotted cream is like incredibly hard to find. There's one scone place in my city and it's downtown, which is like very far from me. It's the only place I know you can get clotted cream.
It really is a different country. Wow.
You know, we're all part of the Commonwealth, but it is a different country.
We're all part of the Commonwealth, but some of us have custard, some of us don't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so circling back around to The Witcher, because it's very British-centric, which I enjoyed.
It
had what I call Hollywood British accents, in that like everyone was so like from such a specific region. We had in the show we have North and South, and it's just like, yeah, they're the two accents that you've got.
Queen's English and Yorkshire. That's all you have.
Yeah, pretty much. So we joked about it in the run up to the episode, but if I was going to say, give us your best British accent to pitch like an audition.
I haven't had a drink. I can do it much better when I've had something to drink. It's been a long time since I've been in England. Sometimes I can do a Yorkshire accent. Even on the spot, I feel so nervous.
Just, you know, because in the context of, you know, we're trying to get you on The Witcher here. This is the thing.
I know. So I could just... yeah, I would love to be on The Witcher as a background person who has no lines. No. What can I say? I don't know. Sometimes, like with the Yorkshire accent, I feel like it's you go high and you go long, but it's been a long time since I've lived there. And now I can't think of anything to say when you put me on the spot. When you put me on the spot, I have a very bad English accent.
I mean, I could hear that.
I can do it, a bad one, you know, for Hollywood.
It sounded acceptable to me. I mean, you know.
Like, is that acceptable?
Yeah.
Good.
I love the way you converted being on the spot into the thing.
Yeah, I didn't know what to say. Sometimes I start speaking in an English accent when I've had a couple of drinks and I'm talking to my children, and then they'll be like, "Why are you talking?"
you'll need
to make
worry.
It more interesting, my child. Yeah, that's how my accent comes up.
You only need to worry if you have a drink and they start speaking British.
Then I've had too many drinks.
That's where you know to stop. Yeah. Okay, I mean, I think you nailed it.
Thanks. You know, thanks. I'm glad I haven't lost it.
Because I mean, you know, I think I've got the right hair color to be in the show. You know, Netflix.
If you want totally some, be in the show.
If you want some disability representation, I'm available.
There you go. We can do it together.
I think that'd work.
You know. We could both be sitting in the bar. You know. Geralt can walk by. I'll give him an eye. He can keep walking. I don't even have to say anything. I'm happy with that. Give me my 1 second of fame, Netflix. I'm here for it.
I want to be there for it. So.
Yeah. Good.
There we go. Easy.
We'll travel. We'll just travel on my own dime. You don't even have to send me. I'll just show up.
Well, I don't want to spoil the your own video, but you do have a video that is Let's Play The Witcher.
You can spoil it. It's okay.
Where are we with that?
Yeah, so for those who haven't seen it, I got real excited about playing The Witcher 3. As I said earlier, I watched my husband play it, and you know, I talk a lot about The Witcher, so I figured I should play it. And it's only for PCs, and I have a Mac, and that hit... I hit a roadblock. I'm waiting for Henry Cavill to come over and build a PC for me, so I can have one. I feel like that's like my other pitch to Netflix. That would make a great special. Ooh,
I mean, sorry, do I need to whip out my Jungian dream analysis at this point? I'm not sure. Have you nodded off during this interview?
No. I haven't gotten anywhere with that. I do have a PC that I think would definitely play it. But I have not yet hooked it up and tried to do it like a PC laptop.
Okay. Well, again, let's play like a video or a stream maybe. Is that potentially forthcoming?
Maybe a video, probably not a stream because my computer will not be able to handle it. I just know. It won't be able to run all of those things at once. But if I do get to play it, yes, it definitely a video, will come from it.
I bought the game from watching the show from the Cavill influencer herself. So I'm excited. It's, you know, like, why would I not want to play it? I have that kind of...
You've never played it?
No.
Okay.
Because I have that game player brain that is, I haven't played 1 and 2. So you got to start with 1, otherwise it won't make any sense.
You don't, though. Not, I think, with this.
Apparently, people have genuinely said to me that 1 is genuinely considered... like pretty bad. Apparently, it's really hard, like just brokenly hard to play. So I've been told. So I'm like, maybe we'll throw in a towel. We'll just start number 3. It's meant to be amazing.
I think, like with people starting with Final Fantasy VII, like Witcher 3 is to the Witcher series as Final Fantasy VII is to the Final Fantasy series. Like, I think Witcher 3 is what put it on the map for like most, like I'm pretty sure it's the first one my husband also ever played of the series. And it was just like massively successful, right? Like game of the year. And it kind of came out of nowhere. So I think you're okay to start with three.
Okay. Well, you hit it here first. And you're okay to start with Witcher 3. Everyone, if you haven't already, get on it.
Yeah. Get on it. Get on it. I will also get on it.
Expand that Cavill influence far and wide.
Look, I've already influenced one person. I feel like that's a success.
Okay, I'm going to put this out to the ethos. I might put this out to Twitter, actually. But can you get a Henry Cavill mod for The Witcher 3? Because if that's not a thing, it should be. Where like it's like properly Henry Cavill? Because I think that's what you
that
should play.
That's the version I should absolutely play. I was going to get my husband a Funko Pop for Christmas, and I was going to get him a Witcher one. And I went to the shops. I was like at the mall, old school. And they were like, oh, we only have the one from the game. And I did pause for a minute, and I was like, all right, it's all right. I'll take the Carol from the game. I mean, if I was to buy one for myself, it would be the Cavill one, obviously. But it was for my husband.
Fair. I mean, how nice of you to not just fill him with more memories of Henry Cavill.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, he hears it enough from me.
Actually, one of the things I'd love to ask about while you're here could you talk us through some of the wonderful things you've got behind you? You've got the nameplate, which is absolute perfection. You've got the Psychomancer plush, which is amazing. I mean, who doesn't want one of those? I know, yes. I sure do. Sign me 10.
You get one at PAX. We have a few left. Yes, I have a curated assortment of things behind me. I have my nameplate was from South by Southwest when I went a few years ago. They had them on the stage, and I was like, I feel like you're just going to throw these away, so I'm going to take that with me. This is a picture from Pragmatic Princess, which is it's a promotional picture from I wrote a children's book in 2019, and I kickstarted it, and I raised almost $30,000 in 30 days to bring the book to life, and that's a picture of the characters from the book. We have Cave Johnson, which is funny because I have all this stuff behind me, and that's the one thing that everyone notices first. It's Cave Johnson from Portal. This is a artist rendition of San Francisco, which was actually the front cover of, like, you used to get these big booklets when you went to conferences that showed you everything that was happening on every day. And it was my first American Psychological Association conference in San Francisco, and that was the picture on the cover, and I really liked it, and I lived in California at the time, so that's that. And then I have a Final Fantasy VI Moogle.
Nice.
A Hope Shield. That's a take this thing. I miss minutes. This is a picture from being part of the Video Game Awards Future Class. Everyone who was part of that got that art.
Congratulations and then, on that, by the way.
Thank you. That was really exciting. And I have Nintendo. I have Lego, Nintendo, and a Grogu, because... Yeah. And I have a couple of awards that I won last year from being part of an ESRB ad campaign. It won a couple of actual awards that are like heavy and could double as weapons. So those are pretty cool. And then these are my books. So I have like rainbow books. These are all kind of like books that I like to read, but these are all books that I have written, edited, or I have a chapter in. So these are like mine.
Nice. Because I mean, I know it's something people ask me about. Like, I've got so much crap behind me.
I see Mario. I see Pokemon. I see Dragon Ball Z. I see a Funko Pops. I see Squirtle.
Yep, there's a Celeste in there as well. Best game ever, in my opinion. The Celeste Deluxe Edition, just there.
Yes, yeah. Excellent. Yeah, see, that's the good thing about having you have a lot of fun stuff behind you, because you can just be like, what is there?
But I was like, you know, again, having seen your videos, I was like, I'm going to ask. This is the time to finally find out what
changes.
Some of that stuff is.
It's funny. If you watched all of it, like, first I'm in a different room, like, for the first set of videos, and there's, like, a totally different background. But now it has morphed into this. This is also, like, a Grundig radio, which is, like, super cool. It's, like, an old school.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway.
So while we're also here, can we talk a little about Build Your Own Castle?
Yeah, so that was Pragmatic Princess. I read a lot of books to my daughter. I was annoyed that there were not very many books with female protagonists who solve their own problems. They always had to be a superhero or have someone help them, and that annoyed me. And so I ended up creating a series of 26 stories. They're like A to Z, You know, like Ava the Adventurous, Bella the Brave. There's 26 different stories about everyday girls doing everyday things with their everyday abilities. And then I kickstarted that in 2019. And actually this year in June, I'm running a second Kickstarter, expanding the series. So we have these 26 character stories, and I'm going to kickstart a series of three topical short stories that feature girls from this universe, but also a new set of male characters. So there's a girl and a boy. And the stories, and one is about death and dying, one is about online stranger danger, and one is about persisting through frustration. And so, yeah, that's going to come out this year. And there's going to be a bonus if we hit a certain level. I did write the first male-focused short story called Geralt the Grumbly. Nice. And it's pretty great. Nice. And it's about accepting your friends as who they are and not trying to change them. So, yeah, so that's fun. This is like a fun side project.
Sorry, just Geralt the Grump. That's, yeah. That's
it's excellent. Really good. It's really, and he has a friend named Jack who may or may not have a jacket like Yaskiro. It's my Witcher fan fiction told in a children's story with a moral that everyone can relate to.
Sorry, just like the Witcher children's friendly version is like a mind-bending concept.
Well, it will come to life June. You too can enjoy. I've seen the art. Randall Hampton, who did the art for this, is doing the art for it. And I've already seen like the character sketches for Geralt and Jack, and it's quite good.
Yeah. Okay. Netflix, while you're on the line, can we get a Pragmatic Princess Build Your Own Castle animated series, please? That would be great.
Yeah. That'd be great.
I would love get Henry Cavill to voice Geralt. Like
Geralt? You know, the grumbly. He can do so much acting with just a grumble. We've already seen it in Witcher.
You see how things just come together, right? Like this all makes sense.
I love how you're pitching me to the world, and I'm here for it. I will make room in my schedule for these meetings.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to happen. It can happen. There's no reason why it shouldn't happen. Ergo, it should happen.
Ergo, I agree.
So, okay, excellent. So that's fantastic. I appreciate you really feeding that divulgence there.
Thank you for asking the question. You indulge me, sir. You indulge me.
I do have questions that I wrote out for reasons. I'm trying to get back to those.
Okay, let's get back to them.
Okay, so... Right, okay, so these are sort of a nice pair of what I like to call blue sky questions. And I realise we may have already sort of covered... what you would do with this answer, so we can leave that as this. But this is if you had no limitations whatsoever, there's no financial constraints, people constraints, you could do whatever. What project would you like to do? And it can be whatever you want. Like we've had a whole range of answers from people from whole. You know, it originally started as like a research question, like what would your research project be? But having interviewed other great people from other great backgrounds, it's expanded. So if you could just that one. Blue sky project that isn't being The Witcher.
Dang, that was my answer. I immediately went to research, but if I could have one thing, it would be a Pragmatic Princess animated series. So I'm going with that. That would be great. All girls, all people need to see themselves represented in media, and you're more likely to have a talking animal as the main character of a story than you are to have a person of color.
Let me take off my glasses. What?
Slow down. More than half the characters in Pragmatic Princess are people of color. There are three characters who have visible disabilities. These are not represented in children's literature, and it's abhorrent. And everyone deserves to be the hero of their own story. That's what I would like.
Well, I mean, that's excellent. I'd love to see it. Have you thought about who you would cast? Apart from Henry Cavill, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Well, you know, all the characters, it's funny, like, they all have... I had people in mind when I created them, and it would be really cool, like in a dream world, Blue Sky Project, to have the people like Kristen the Kind was visually inspired by Kristen Bell. Quinn the Quick was visually inspired by Serena Williams. Like, there are people who are like my inspiration for each of the different characters. So I
but in a non-copyrightable way, any characters depicted are completely coincidental.
Yes, they don't look exactly like them. They're just inspired. Inspired by them. Yeah.
Okay. So that's all right. I mean, I love the fact that you had like the inspirations from them, because
I did.
You break into a really interesting area, and I've had this rant before, like on stream and stuff, but like as a person with albinism, like in my case, like if you're in the media at all, you're a villain, which is a disability trope in of itself, but like, you know,
right,
thanks Da Vinci Code, you know what I mean? So it's, you know, if you do get any representation, it's usually tokenistic or completely like the Invisible Man, H.G. Wells, was a person with albinism in the original fiction. And that's, you know, again, like the villain of the piece. You can get a bit more like meta in that, like, I mean, in the actual writing, is not the new film, but the original sort of story, like, you know, it's a bit more meta and about society and people's roles. You can interpret it that way. But it is something we need more, again, like as a young person, like, you know, that's one of the things I think I veered more towards video games, because you could see this whole cast and plethora of characters with different hair colors, even just something as basic as that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there was that Gina Davis documentary, I haven't seen it, full transparency, but about like the representation of women, even, let alone people of color, let alone people with disabilities. Like, there is such a great hill to climb with media representation that's not, like you said, tokenistic or an afterthought. Like, I just brought up some of these stats, like of the best top 100 best-selling children's book in the last year, 1 in 5 doesn't have a female, only 2 have a person of color in a central role, only 1 has a person with a disability, but they do not speak or have a key role.
Wow.
Out of the top 100 best-selling books. Children's books.
Disappointed but not surprised.
Well, let's try and change it. Let's try and be the change you want to see in the world. That's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We can try.
Let's go. Yes. and I just want to get in my little jab at Nintendo, because I like to do this. Why can't I have white hair in Animal Crossings? Fix it.
Oh, yeah.
You can have nearly every other color. You can't have. I have to have gray. My hair is not gray. Gray's cool. Love your silver foxes. All great. Like, love it. Salt and pepper. All great. But it's not me. But we've had it in previous iterations. It's been there. Why is it not there?
Yeah. Why not? Don't know. There's my baby.
What?
Hi, baby.
Clearly feeling the pain. We can resonate with that.
He's lamenting with you. Yeah. He understands.
I feel it. So it's... Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing I like to go on about. But you know, so if you need a character inspiration, albinism, get that in there.
All right,
representation. Love to see.
I'm here for it. Okay, done.
Plugging myself in the universe.
Done. There. Yeah, I'm gonna put you in there.
I mean, what can I say? Working in research on PhDs doesn't pay enough. I need these other side gigs. Voicing on, you know, the Pragmatic Princess animated series, all there those sorts go. Of things. Just gotta do the business. Okay, so that would be awesome. So just going back to the blue sky idea, because I don't want us to be too reductive with that, right?
Yes.
It's blue skies, you can do anything. Would you like want to build like a bigger universe? Would you expand beyond the animated series? Like, you know, there's animation is still hugely popular. I think a lot of people kind of look at Netflix and go, I mean, the Cuphead series just come out. Vox
it's
Machina
great.
Is like, you know, really popular.
I mean, I joke with my husband, this isn't Netflix, this is Disney, so we're crossing brands, but I want like a Pragmatic Princess section of Disney.
Nice.
Like, honestly, nice. Like there's Isabelle the Incredible in the original book is a magician. You could have a little magic shop for her. Bella's mom in the book has a bakery. You could have Bella's mom's bakery. We could have a whole section of Disney. I want it all. I want it all. And not for me. It doesn't have to be for me, but for, you know, the fictional characters of our childhood teach us what's valued in society. They teach us, they show us what we can do. They show us what our limitations and what our strengths are. And it shouldn't be that only white boys get to have the show. You know, people of all genders should be represented. People of all abilities should be represented and show what they can do. Everyday people are the real heroes in our life and our society. Right? Why aren't we seeing the everyday heroes in our books? Why do you have to have superpowers? Like, why can't it just be the power of being kind or generous? And that's the point of the story. So yes, I want a section of Disney World, but you know, I will happily talk to you, Netflix. Maybe we can make a Netflix world. Okay. Yeah. We can give me a call.
wouldn't be surprised if in 5 years it's a thing. Like,
let's do it.
Why one? Let's make it happen. I'm here
why
for.
Why not?
Like,
yeah, me too.
All right, excellent. So, again, I have actual questions in amongst my rambling and impertinent questions. Okay, this next one is a nice one. In yes. It is. We can take inspiration from many places and many people. Is there any mm-hmm. persons, group, or thing you would like to give a little shout out to? That, you know, let's just sideline Henry Cavill and The Witcher and Netflix because they should be calling you anyway. But anyone you'd like to give like a shout out to, like?
I would love to give a shout out to my boss, Eve Cravishay, the executive director of Take This. When I joined Take This, they did not have the budget for a research director. They did not have the desire for a research director. And she, I had a phone call with her and I pleaded my case and she saw the value in it and the value in me and my work. And she took me on. And the first year it was unpaid, but it was, you know, here we can work together, we can talk, try and find some grants, try and find some projects. And we flash forward to today, and I am a full-time employee of the organization, and I love what I do. And being able to work with the industry and outreach with the community is an absolute dream come true. So shout out to you, Eve, for bringing me into the fold, and Dr. B, who I 100% bullied in the nicest and consensual of ways, into giving me the conversation with Eve in the first place.
Nice. I will say I have had the pleasure of speaking with Eve at various points through various projects with my involvement with Take This. And Eve is fantastic. So I can totally vouch for that one. I've spoken to Dr. B via text messages at this point, but I've seen a lot of his content. So he's also very awesome. So I can vouch for and both be envious of both of those.
They're great people. We have a great group at Take This. We got Sarah, we got Dr. Kelly Dunlap. It's really kind of a dream team, I have to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about everyday heroes. I mean, you know, like if Take This do like posters or something, I can get up on the wall, like
that's,
you know, like
hilarious.
Like an Avengers / you know, Justice League kind of setup, like that would be dope.
Great.
Like,
yeah, I mean, Gamer Doc. Dr. Lindsay Miglior, she's a medical doctor. She's also a Take This streaming ambassador. In her pitch to become a streaming ambassador, she did actually superimpose our faces onto various members of the Avengers. Eve was Nick Fury, obviously. Sarah, I feel like, was Black Widow. Dr. Dunlap was Hawkeye. I was the Hulk, which...
The Credible Hulk.
Fits. The Credible Hulk. It fits. And Dr. B was Captain America. So yeah, I feel like Randall Hampton, where are you? I feel like this should happen. We should have a poster of us as our Avenger characters.
Again, I mean, I'd buy it. Maybe that's just me because I'm like super enthusiastic. So much so it's probably an annoyance. I don't care. I like what I like. Let's roll. But yeah, like that'd be, I mean, look, I'm not vying for a job. Let's calm down. But Take This do have a great
You have
team.
A job. You're a PhD student. That is a job. That's a full-time job.
That's true. That's true. Got to think forward though, right? Like,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm like,
we
I'm
do
like,
offer summer research internships.
I'm like sitting here. I'm looking at the clock being like, oh gosh, like, you know, Safe in Our World, they're expanding. Take This are ever growing.
They
I'm like,
are.
Can you just wait like another like year and a half before you research assistants?
We'll still be here. Like, we'll still be here.
Like, just don't hire research. Wait for it. I'll be ready.
Okay.
Give me some time. Like,
sounds good.
I mean, not to like, you know, suggest you shouldn't continue growing or anything, but I'm just like, oh gosh, am I going to miss the bus here?
Well, I'm applying for grants now that will come in 2023 if I get them, if I am so lucky. So, you know, the timing is there.
Well, you see, tapping up, I mean, interviewing on podcasts. It's all gravy. Right. Yeah. So the last sort of little bit, I'm conscious of time. I'm very, very respectful of the fact you've come and sat down so long already. I like to do a little bit of a quick fire round.
Right.
And this is, I ask you to pick one film and or TV series. You can have like the entire collection. The premise is that you are going for a break on an island with a weather climate of your choice.
Okay.
I certainly wouldn't be going to a desert island. Have you seen
it? No.
yeah, albinism joke. It's all good. So yeah, you're going to an island. You're going to for some rest.
Yes.
Indefinite.
Okay.
I've stolen this premise from Desert Island Discs. What can you do? It's slightly different. It's different enough. Copyright. But you're taking with you one sort of film or TV show collection. Where everything will work. Don't need to worry about that. An album. Okay. It can be a greatest hits or whatever, but an album, a book, and a video game. What do you take?
You know, I want to say The Witcher, but I won't. Amadeus is my favorite movie of all time. And if I'm on an island, which would have Canada fall weather, I'm going to take Amadeus. If I have to pick an album, I would pick Green Day Nimrod. If I can only pick one. A video game. I mean, if I'm there for an indefinite amount of time, I feel like Animal Crossing has a really long longevity. Like things change with the seasons, and I feel like that would be like a safe bet to take Animal Crossing. And a book, just one. The book would be.
You can have a collection. Like if we were going to say the complete works of Shakespeare, or like all of the Dune books,
be a good choice.
Or like, you know, something like that. If it comes in a box set, if you can physically buy it in a box
set, I can have it. Okay.
So the Witcher books, they're in a box set.
I read them. That would be a good choice. I mean, if I was going today, I'd take the Witcher box set. That's good because I need to read them, and they would keep me entertained. And then I'd have a little piece of, you know, Henry Cavill with me. There you go.
The video game choice is people are given such interesting answers to it because they either seem to go with something that they know will have like huge replayability or something that kind of functions in that it lives in its own ecosystem and I could play it for days, like Animal Crossing.
Yeah. And Animal Crossing, I like it because it's a real good, like, relaxing type game. Like, I love Legend of Zelda, all of those games, but you know, there's a little stress when you're in the, you know, water dungeon and you want to beat the boss and you can't, and you're moving, like there's a lot of wall jumps. There's a lot to do there, but Animal Crossing is just chill. Just plant some flowers and sit on the beach.
Yeah. Have you got have you got a Henry Cavill themed island?
Let's not get, no, I do not have a Henry Cavill themed island. I don't want to seem like I have lost touch with reality. I just think he's nice. And if he wants to visit my island, he can teach me how to play Warhammer. I mean, I'll have plenty of time for that.
Okay. No, I meant like, you know, on Animal Crossing.
Oh, on Animal Crossing? No, I don't. No. Actually, my island is called Pluto. And I live on it with my 7-year-old and my 4-year-old. And there's a lot of like sports ball arenas. There's a basketball court and a soccer court and a lot of sports happening. So my children really kind of, lots of weeds too. My children kind of take care of it for me. So I don't really have much say in it.
But you like the systematic issues of management. You're in charge of it, but you don't really do the day to day.
They don't. Every once in a while I go in, I'm like, what are all these weeds doing here? And then I pull weeds for an hour and then I don't log in for like a couple weeks.
Ain't that the truth?
I know.
So, out of interest, are you a sports ball fan?
I love college American football, but that's because I'm from Texas and I feel like it's in my blood. Hook'em, I follow UT college football, but that's it. I like watching the Olympics. I love watching the Olympics, but I don't really like follow anything regularly except for that. What about you? Do you follow sports ball?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm from Liverpool, so big soccer football.
Liverpool
fan.
Is my football team. I picked one when I moved to England. I was told I had to pick one, and I picked Liverpool, so I'm there.
I would call that an excellent choice. I mean, like, at this point, insert that Step Brothers meme of, like, did we just become best friends? Because I think we just did.
Yeah.
My boys, the red men, love to see it. I love sports. I you know, my games of choice are either 400-hour JRPGs or equally FIFA. As many hours, but like in like Pro Evo or Rocket League or FIFA.
Yeah.
I was playing recently Pure Pool. I've been playing a lot of that.
Oh, cool.
Because it just feels really smooth, but it's just nice playing pool.
Yeah, that's nice.
I played Strike Bold as well, which is Dodgeball.
Oh, wow.
That's hilarious and, like, but fun. Like, the mechanics are fun, like catching a ball and throwing
That'd be fun
ball.
In VR.
Oh, gosh. That would be...
An accident waiting to happen, but it would be fun.
Oh, yeah, it'd be fun, but painful.
Cool. Yeah, I don't play too many games. I remember the Nintendo, like, Olympics games. I definitely played those, where you just button mash to, like, run on the track. I definitely played a lot of those as a kid.
Hoping for the best. Loves to see it.
Yeah. It's all just random.
So at this point, I like to turn the tables and give you the chance to ask me a question. You can ask whatever you want. Not even within reason, to be honest. Just ask whatever you want, like YOLO. I will say.
Yes.
I have had the Desert Island question before. I've also had the What Would My Blue Sky Project Be before. So those are previous answers. But otherwise, ask me whatever you want.
I have two questions. It's a two-parter. You know when you go to a talk and they're like, it's more of a comment than a question. It's not. It's a real question, but it's two comments. Two questions. What is your favorite thing about your PhD program, process, journey, and your least favorite thing about it?
Ooh, I mean, I get lynched if I don't say my amazing supervisor,
she's
Dr.
amazing.
Linda Kay, right? Like, that's... I have to say that by default, right? Yes. No, yes. Like the team is important, especially because I speak to a lot of people who maybe don't have as good a working relationship with their supervisory team, right? And just how big an impact that makes is super huge. So I'm genuinely very lucky with that. Like, I get on with all of them. In terms of the actual best thing, I think it's just how, like, it relates to how I go about things, firstly, because, like, you know, like, I sort of deliberately picked up Twitter and went, right, this is a tool, I use this now, when I started the PhD, which is how we cross paths. But honestly, I think it has been that kind of, I'm going to say rapid, because it feels very much like a rocket, you know, Final Fantasy VII reference, heading straight up there, in that rapidity to just how, like, I expanded my network and horizons. Like, I started just reading about a topic and stumbled across Take This and Safe in Our World. And, yeah, I'm a streaming ambassador. I picked content creation up because I was like, scientific communication and dissemination is really important, especially when I'm talking about topics that I'm passionate about, but also, in my opinion, like, very universally applied, like mental health. My research focuses on the student population. Yeah, sure, but it's something we all experience. We all experience ill mental health at various points as well. I also just love games, obviously. I'm aware of my inherent bias there. I think, like, the way at which I've expanded that and met people and have been able to develop myself, I feel like this is like an interview type answer. But, like, just how much I've been able to gain by, like, meeting other people and, like, the little fanboy moments that I'm having, like this right now, are just sort of like an incredible part of the package. I kind of describe the PhD in two ways. The first one is like, you've started a game, like a main quest, you've done the tutorial section, and then all I've done since is subquests. like the main quest has progressed. I'm way over leveled now, but I just need to actually get through some of the main quest. Or you're running, like, you start a PhD and they're like, okay, right, run a marathon. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? And they're like, no, run a marathon. Like, just go for it. And you're like, okay. And then next thing you know, it becomes like Mario Kart. And, like, people are throwing shells at you. And there are bananas everywhere. Mm-hmm. You lose gravity for some apparent reason. The road is closed, so you have to take an extra 3-mile diversion. You know, that's kind of how it feels. But I do think that, like, it's that networking. It sounds like a dirty corporate word, that, doesn't it? But it really is that expansion of, like, horizons and the people I've met and the things I've been able to do as a platform because of that. The least favorite thing, honestly, if I speak, I get in trouble. Academia, like, the systems that I'm in, like, I...
The way you said it.
I've been on record as saying, you know what, I enjoy teaching. I physically enjoy the pedagogical element of teaching. It's great when you explain something to someone and you see them get it. That's beautiful. I love that. That's great. What I don't like is the bureaucracy. Marking is, like, literally the worst thing in existence. those things really put me off wanting to get into academia as an industry, especially when like studying video games, there are so many different avenues that I can work in. That kind of gives me some hope in that regard. And just, you know, not to, I don't want to end on a sour note, but like, you know, like just the issues that higher education has in the UK, particularly vis-a-vis representation, as we were talking about before, things like that, just like for me, really take a bit of the edge off. Like, yeah, I'm within the system, I'm trying to make change, but like, it shouldn't be this hard, you know?
Yeah. Academia is a hard life, honestly. You work way more than you should. You don't get kudos. You don't get any pats on the back for doing more. It's just like expected that you're doing more than you, than you're getting paid. And the pay's not even that good. Not really. Not for all the work you're doing. Definitely. Now, it's hard. I also love teaching. So that was hard to give up. But I find that like doing things like this, this is still teaching. Doing panels, you know, it's a form of teaching and education. So you can still get that joy of sharing your expertise and your knowledge with other people, even if you're not in academia.
And I think that's why like I enjoy doing a lot of like the content stuff and stuff like, I mean, this has been great just to hear from so many amazing people on like on a whim, for a laugh almost. But like, yeah, just having those opportunities, I think, still give you a way to talk about things. Like I actively talk about stuff that I'm reading and looking at and doing like on my stream, for example. Because yes, it's important for communication, but it gives me that outlet that isn't confined rigidly by academia's academia's constraints.
Yeah, it's true. Well, those were good answers. And also, for those who are interested in getting into a PhD, your supervisor is the single most important decision that you will make. Choose wisely.
Well, you mentioned yourself that you went to York because of the supervisor. I did exactly the same thing with Linda, because I was like, she's one of the few people that was like Northwest in England that were remotely related to what I was doing. And I was like, well, eggs in basket, because nowhere else wants a slice of this action.
So, oh, that's not true.
Talk about everyday resilience and overcoming things.
Yeah.
I was rejected from various universities and PhD programs, I think at least at least six times.
Yeah, the rejections hurt. Yeah.
But every time I was like, nope, I'm going to come back again.
It was meant to be, because now you got Linda. It's meant to be.
Worked out.
Just like I was meant to be at Take This. I was rejected from over 100 jobs that I applied, over 100. I only got one interview, and it was at a small liberal arts college in California, and they wanted to pay me a ridiculously low salary, and I was like, how am I supposed to live on that salary? And they were like, oh, you have to live an hour away. And I was like, what? No. So it was meant to be. Yeah.
Okay, is there anything else that you'd like to add or just say? I mean, apart from Netflix call you?
Netflix call me. Chris, thank you for having me. If you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter and YouTube, and I'm sure those links are somewhere below.
All of those links will be attached to wherever you found this.
Yep. Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Well, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate your time. I will, for our video viewers, I will flip over to the ending screen for us to say farewell, ta-ta, etc. When I can find it. I always lose it. Where is it? There it is. Okay. Dr. Rachel Cott, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, sir.
I have been truly psyched to be with you. Thank you so much. Goodbye, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I did. If you did, do please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps. Otherwise, check out the description of the episode for the links for the guest, but also to keep up with information about the show and myself. I really hope you enjoyed this listen. Until next time, take it easy. Look after your mind, body, and soul. And I'll see you again for another episode very, very soon. Bye-bye.